Greetings, everybody. Welcome to Flywheel, your number one source for everything Frax DeFi and all that's in between. If you want to know what's going on in the world on chain, well, you come to the right place. This is DeFi Dave here with Capital K, finally again. And we're here to help you harness the power of the flywheel. And going into the stack, a bit into the Frax stack, into the Fractal stack, we have on Josh from Optimism, where Fractal is built on the OP stack. And we go into everything you need to know about Optimism, from the tech to the culture, to everything in between. Kit, what are your thoughts on this one?
Bullish super chains, super optimistic futures.
And Kit, you know what I've been doing for intros now since you've been gone? I've been posing a question for our viewers before they watched. And so for our viewers listening to this, I would like to pose, in the same way that there are money Legos, the future is modular Legos. In the same way different apps plug into each other, there's different parts of the modular infrastructure stack that plug into each other. So, and not just infrastructure wise, but also think about it in what fits together in the culture, and like how culture also drives the technology under it and pushes it forward, and how Optimism has decided to basically their conscious decision with retroactive public goods and how they present themselves and how they act going forward with their culture. And that's the how the framework and I want to present people to go into this interview. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. But before we tune in, make sure you go ahead, give us a subscribe, give us a hit that bell button, give us a like, give us a comment, let us know what you think on YouTube. Make sure you follow us on all our socials, Twitter, TikTok, and Telegram at Flywheel DeFi. Go ahead to our website, flywheeldefi.com. Give us a subscription there for all the alpha. You'll thank us later. You'll thank yourself later. Follow me at DeFiDave22 on Twitter.
And follow me at 0xCapital_K.
And let's get the flywheel spinning. Do you hold ETH but don't know what to do with it? Want to earn those juicy liquid staking derivative yields but don't know where to start? Well, Frax ETH is there for you. Frax ETH is Frax's native LSD solution, allowing you to earn boosted yields in multiple ways on your ETH. If you want to get started, go to app.frax.finance and turn your ETH into Frax ETH today. All right, everybody. Welcome back to Flywheel. I'm your host, DeFi Dave. Joined, finally, he has returned, Kit, to the pod. Kit, welcome back. It's great to have you back. It's been tough without you. I've been missing you, I'm not gonna lie.
Thank you, champ. I miss you too. I'm back and I'm ready to get it. And I'm so glad that I'm back on this specific podcast. Dave, tell them why.
I know, because I feel like this was meant to be, because me and Josh, do you go by Josh or J-Dubs?
Josh.
Okay. Josh from leading BD at Optimism. We've been trying to coordinate this interview for almost a month now, and something always comes up, like a last minute meeting, emergency meeting there, like some personal thing here. But like, it has aligned for the return of Kit, which I could not be more happy for, because I've been missing my like technical MBA financial edge, and I feel like we're definitely going to need that for this pod. So Josh, thank you so much for coming on. It's a pleasure to have you. Josh from Optimism, and Frax is, of course, on the super chain, so it's all the more fitting. Before we get into it, Josh, can you give a little bit of intro about yourself, how you got into crypto, and how you joined Optimism?
For sure, yeah. A few things for clarification. One, Irv actually leads our BD. I work very closely with him. I can talk through that kind of differentiation.
Okay.
Two, I don't know if it's worth it, but there's like, when we're doing OP radio, we typically do some kind of disclaimer. Do you guys mind if I throw that out there?
Yeah, you can do a disclaimer.
Just so your audience knows, like, this is all in my own personal capacity, and not for the respective company I'm with. To the extent that I talk about any forward-looking statements and made during the episode, just keep that in mind. And also remember that OP is a government governance token as a whole, not an investment. And anything I say, you know, is should not be construed as investment advice. Okay, that aside. So how I got into the space... my background's all over the place, actually. I was originally going to do like my PhD in quantum mechanics and political theory. And then I left that to do consulting with system dynamic modeling, which is like math that was kind of the precursor to a lot of the machine learning math that was used. That was like the first tranche of my career.
Wait, quantum mechanics and political theory? Like,
Yeah, there was like a theory I derived for my thesis that the best way to articulate it was by kind of transposing that theory onto quantum mechanics. My friends in the hard sciences hated anyone who ever talked about like hard sciences principles applied to soft sciences, but it was the best way for us to look at the world.
What was it? Can we get into it for a sec?
For sure, yeah. It's super hippie. And it's actually like serendipitously what brought me to optimism.
Perfect.
Well, the crux for a lot of political systems to date, like for thousands of years, has been it's lofty. Again, these views represent my views, not that of optimism.
Yeah.
But the
just say that before you say anything. That's right. Drill in the head. This is Josh speaking. Okay.
This is Josh. Go ahead. But basically, like, what does it mean to remove the same way like we had to move, you know, we shifted it with Copernicus away from heliocentrism. My thesis was how do we shift like nation states and political machines away from human centered like trends. So the theory was called trans anthropocentrism. And it's basically bringing non-humans into the fold, both kind of those we would call like below our sentience and those above it. So in some ways it was actually like a lot of precursor to the debate that we're having right now with AI and AGI.
Wow.
Yeah. So I was like that was like the set path. I was going to do academia. And then I was on a beach in the south of Turkey and the guy I was going to do my PhD with sent me a draft of a paper. And I was like, man, I think he's just doing it. And so I decided in that moment to stop and make an abrupt change and go to like the applied world, i.e. business. Yeah.
Okay. So what'd you do in i.e. business?
So at first I did consulting and like data science, with some really big, like Fortune 100 companies for the first like third of my career. And then the second third, very big change. But because of my thesis and my background, I was very heavily like obsessed with sustainability and longevity, and still am, but made it switch to start a company that was in the consumer goods space. So I started an organic, sustainable skincare company, very big change. And then I left that during COVID. And then I started kind of as like it was a weird non-technical CTO role. And then when I was there, I was looking at the tech stack and part of it was scraping data from users in order to make better predictions of the models that we were working on. And I was debating, do I want to put some of this on chain or not? So I actually got into the space by thinking about it from an ML perspective, but then I got really obsessed with the math behind stablecoins and the behavioral economics. And then I kind of made the third switch. So that brought me to algo stables. So I joined like a fully anon algo stable protocol, DeFi Dave. I have a feeling the community is going to officially know who I am now, because I think you've done something on the team. Anyway, did something there for a minute. We had a pretty hot. We had an exploit that happened that really rattled the protocol. That's actually when I first started learning about like SAM and Frax, because to be honest, that was before SAM was fully collateralized. Or sorry, Frax was fully collateralized.
SAM was fully collateralized. Yeah.
And anyway, so it became a fan of him back then. Then that left that team. I joined Circle for a bit. I worked on strategy there on a whole range of things. And then after that, I was like, okay, I want to go deeper in the stack. So I joined Optimism.
That is quite the journey.
A journey.
Yeah, but yeah. The TLDR, like, actually, I know we'll go through these questions, but like, I'm glad that I talked about that, because actually my background a long time ago incredibly aligns with what Optimism is trying to do. Like this idea of like a decentralized internet and the idea of like creating public goods and just making like the ethos as a whole of what Optimism reflects actually is like, it's like from my upbringing. So it's great because like, I'm never putting on a face for anything. I'm just candidly myself 100% of the time. So it's gravy. It's great.
Yeah. So what is Optimism trying to do? What is Optimism? How does it differentiate itself, you know, from other contemporaries such as like Arbitrum or like the Polygon ZKEVM? What is the superchain and all that stuff? Let's get right into it. Just feel free to ran on.
Yeah. Love it. So the goal of the superchain as a whole, is to basically bring shared bridging, you know, centralized governance, upgrades, like a communication layer, all together in one place. And to be honest, a lot of this stems more so from like the history of where the team came from. So I'm newer to the team, so I'll definitely speak on behalf of what they built to date. But originally when Optimism was formed, it was actually like Plasma Group, if you guys remember. And that was when Carl and Jing and Ben were thinking about like how do they actually scale Ethereum. And so they started rolling, like transitioned away from Plasma Group and built OP Mainnet itself, which was meant to be open source and MIT licensed, so it could be forkable and have a lot of basically Ethereum and EVM equivalents to it. And then after the last bull run, there was kind of, and along the way, there were other pieces that were added to that, which you can talk about with RetroPGF and OP governance. But then after the last bull run, there was kind of this broader question and thesis that was put forward by the team about the law of chains and what it means to not scale one L2, but to scale like an ecosystem of L2s. And so in some ways, it pulls a little bit from that notion of Cosmos, but it's different in the sense that it's kind of more horizontally scalable versus a hub and spoke. And that's kind of the nexus of where Optimism Superchain came from. So there was the Bedrock launch that happened in 2023. And that allowed for like a lot more modularity to the stack. And then thereafter, the chain started to kind of, build out. And so obviously, since then, everyone knows about Base. Sora, Mode, Frax has launched. WorldCoin has obviously been working with us. And then there's a ton of other teams that are coming through the pipe. And it seems like almost every other day, there's a team that we're talking to on the L2 front. I know we'll talk about the L3 front later, Dave.
Yeah, I want to get back to what you said, because obviously when you started talking and when I first heard of the Optimism Superchain, it was Cosmos that first came to mind. But you said it's actually, you know, quite different. You said Optimism is more horizontal, while Cosmos is more hub and spoke. Could we go dive deeper into these differences and what you mean by that?
Yeah, to the extent that I can talk through it, because I'm not a Cosmos expert, to be fair. But I think one of the biggest things is that the Cosmos stack itself, it has this consensus layer and network and interaction, and basically each of the chains have their own validator set, which is a bit different from the way that we're handling it on Optimism. Whereas with Optimism, it's, as I mentioned before, a lot more of a shared communication layer, and it's all settling down to Ethereum. Obviously, we're quite EVM maxis. And the way that IBC is used, if I'm being honest, also from the tech side, is still something that I'm trying to wrap my head around of how that will be different from native interop. But the way I'm likening it to understanding it is I worked with Circle with CCTP when it launched, and there's kind of the burn and mint at the native protocol level when we're doing message passing. That's to the extent that I can give you the difference of IBC versus our native interop, which I don't think is incredibly helpful, but.
Got it. Yeah. And with the Superchain, you guys have had quite the BD effort. Like you said, you onboarded, you know, Base, Zora, Frax, of course. What do you think separates the Superchain from all the other options out there? Like, why is it so popular? What do you think are the advantage of it? And what do you think teams are thinking about when they're picking a L2 stack to build on?
Yeah, I think narrative, you know, plays a big role all the time. Doesn't matter what's happening in the space. It seems like narrative and like is always a big role. From a product perspective, I think teams are often asking about modularity in terms of DA layers. If we're thinking about within you know, Ethereum, what does it mean to have a different DA layer? What does it mean to have a native gas token? What does the interop look like? Where is it settling? So from a product perspective, I think there's a lot of us, like we're approaching things very similarly. Also fault proofs as a whole, how are we actually approaching those? I can talk through those timelines later on, but I think from a product perspective, the way that we're trying to scale these kind of larger monolith, like broader set of chains has some similarities to it. I think the culture and the way that the ecosystems work is quite different. Optimism as a whole is really meant to be like a collective good, as I mentioned, like an open source, like a piece of software that basically anyone can build on. And so, for example, like when you're part of the Superchain, there's a sequencer revenue fee, and that sequencer revenue fee doesn't go back to Optimism Foundation. It doesn't go back to like any small subset of people or anything. It goes directly back into the collective, and that is used to basically pay out retro via RetroPGF. And I think that's probably one of the most interesting like experiments that the team is going through amongst everything else, right? Stage 2 decentralization, native to native interop between chains. Like these things are all really difficult, but on top of that, we're also working through this kind of decentralized governance piece that does retroactive funding. So I think like the bold choices that the team at Optimism is trying to pursue does set it apart very differently. If I'm being honest, we probably should spend more time looking at Arbitrum and looking at Polygon and looking at ZK Sync. But we're just incredibly overwhelmed with the amount of work that we're tackling ourselves, that we're not spending, you know, a ton of time looking at them. But obviously, and so like to that extent, like we can talk about like layer threes and what happened with D10 chain. And to be honest, like I was caught off guard because I didn't even realize that you could settle an L3 on Arbitrum outside of Arbitrum. I thought I had to settle on that. And so like that in itself was like, when did this change? Like, how did this world shift so quickly? So
yeah, actually, Josh, could we dive into that? Because earlier you mentioned there's a lot of projects reaching out to you talking about L2s and also possibly L3s. But for the audience, could you give us what that distinction means? Like, what makes an L3 an L3 and what makes an L2 an L2?
Yeah, that's great. So, first, the L1, you know, in general, let's just assume that we're all residing in Ethereum and we're settling on Ethereum. Mm-hmm. The L2 is the next step of the stack, which is the rollup itself. So if we're thinking of one individual chain that would previously have been like just OP mainnet that you would think about or just base, within the superchain, the idea is that you'll have these, like I kind of think of it like your hand where you'll have the, like your knuckles kind of as Ethereum or like the palm is like Ethereum and like the knuckles are almost like the interop between the chains. And then all the chains function independently with that while abiding by kind of the law of chains and the superchain governance, the shared upgrades, the sequencer fees, all the pieces that I mentioned before. And then an L3 is a chain that is built on top of one of those subsequent chains. And so I think like it is kind of confusing because the way I thought of the Arbitrum ecosystem, it was more of like you just have the Arbitrum chain itself, and then you have all of the layer three spinning off of that L2. Which is was more in line with the way I was thinking of Polygon, but obviously with Egg Layer, that's changing because now it seems like everything is settling from all of their chains in different ways. So with us, with Optimism, it's yet a different approach where the super chain is kind of the baseline for everything. You have individual chains that are siloed on top of that, and then there's the potential for a chain to grow on one of those L2s as an L3. And there's a lot of teams have to consider with that. Sorry. So for example, like the big thing is where is the settlement actually happening? Because you're, especially when it comes to L3s within the Optimism ecosystem, because you're basically taking on the security of the L2 that you're settling to. And that applies to every ecosystem. And so the big thing with Superchain is the significance of an L2 settling onto the security of Ethereum. And that's kind of obviously what we've put ourselves behind.
So to summarize, like the way I think about an L3 or any L's is where do you settle, right? If you're an L2 is when you settle on Ethereum. You're an L3 when you settle on some L2 instead of settling back onto Ethereum. Is that a fair way to, is that a good framework to kind of think about these L's?
Yeah, I think that's a fair way of thinking about it. Yeah.
Got it. And then you mentioned DGen. That came out of nowhere and took on by surprise. Like what surprised you about it? Did you guys really not know that was coming down the pipeline?
So I was listening to the talk they gave, and apparently it was like at the tail end of ETH Denver that they were starting to chew on the idea. So I think it was really fresh. I myself wasn't like I'm not deep in the DGen like space or like even in the Farcaster space, I wasn't too deep into it. So yes, I was definitely caught off guard. I think, again, the big surprise for me is I didn't realize that you could take an Orbit chain and settle to an L2 chain. Like I genuinely thought you had to go through ARB governance in order to settle outside of it. So that was kind of the big thing that I was surprised by. I mean, it's great because it's showing yet another way that there's modularity within the ecosystem. It does bring on a bunch of other questions though that, because even in Optimism, you know, there's this question that we're asking of like, well, what would it even mean to grow? If you were to do an L3 on top of an existing L2, there are other questions that you have that we're asking in terms of what does it mean for providing sequencer feedback to the collective? What does it mean from a governance perspective? Like there are a lot of other broader questions that are being asked. And I think what we're trying to get to, which we're actually getting to pretty fairly quickly, is being able to do, you know, via RaaS providers, and potentially through self-hosting, but largely through RaaS providers, very easily spin up an L2. And so that you don't really necessarily have to think of the blockchain infrastructure and the security and the upgrades. And I think L3s are teams that are kind of abstracting that even further away. But you do still kind of inherit a lot of the principles of when you launch an L3 that you do with an L2. But to be honest, it seems like it's largely vernacular. I'll be honest, at Denver, there was a talk that I was at, and the talk was like, I forgot what it was, but it felt like it was an outdated conversation because it was all about L3s. When I do think the next wave myself is on L2s, like I think L3s will come down a notch because of how easy and how cheap it will be to spin up an L2, and because then you'll have access to your own sequencer revenue fee or sequencer revenue, and you'll have more control. And like, you know, the goal with Optimism and with the superchain is to have a fully decentralized set of chains where you don't have like any monolithic chains that are making all the decisions. Like the goal of it is similar to the OP stack, is meant to be open source and decentralized. And so in that case, like if you have a realm of thousands of actors, your voice is stronger, the same way like in like a representative democracy versus like, and you know, any kind of larger like oligopoly or something, oligarchy or something like that, you have just chunks of people versus like a much more dispersed set of contributors and voices in the community. So I say that because like there are a lot of things that I think we're still chewing on and trying to make sure we understand about, like as the L3 ecosystem grows itself, what the implications of that mean are, what that is for the super.
So you actually think there's going to be more L2s because as it becomes easier and cheaper and simpler to launch an L2. Why would one launch an L3 if L3s may have like a lot more risk associated with it? And like, I feel like DGEN could have launched as an L2 if it wanted to. I think for the narrative, whether it's like the meme narrative, right, or the modularity narrative, or like, you know, maybe just like trying things out, it just like made sense and it like works. Like, let's be real, it's pretty cool the mechanic they have of like, oh, like all like the fees that they have that goes and like apes and buys DGEN. That's a pretty cool mechanic.
Dave, let me just add one more color onto this. It's like, as we were talking, I knew it was DGEN was related to Farcaster, and I knew Farcaster was on OP stack, but then I just made the assumption that DGEN was also on the OP stack, and then it turns out, but they're an Arbitrum orbit, like
they were originally an Optimism token, right? They're OP. It was originally a token on it was originally a token on Base, which is OP stack,
right? Yeah. So then I'm confused. How does all that work together? Like, I thought it would have just been all OP, and out of nowhere, Arbitrum orbit came in.
I'm going to ask you guys this for grace on this one, because again, I was even talking to my team about it today, and it's still that's why I was so caught off guard. I was like, I didn't realize this could happen. So I'm still cobbling some pieces together, but I will say like it's settling. So they are settling onto Base, and Base is part of the superchain, and then obviously is part of the OP stack as a whole. And I do think it's kind of like a part of it. Like there is almost like a mind shift that has to happen where Optimism again, like, there's a bunch of different words for Optimism. There's Optimism Collective, there's OP Mainnet, there's OP, which is the stack. There's the superchain, right? And so there's a ton of things. I think the easiest way to kind of simplify it is like the OP Collective is like everything under the Optimism umbrella. So in theory, the DGEN chain will create some revenue that will be collected by Base that will go back to the Optimism Collective. So in theory, like, because they are part of Base, there is some small part of the DGEN chain that will be associated with the Optimism Collective. But I would say like the most important things would be, if you think of the superchain, Base resides on the superchain, the OP Collective, which is the catch-all for anyone who's basically working with the OP stack and contributing sequencer revenue. And then like the OP token, which is the governance token across all of them. Those are kind of like, I would say like the three components. I know it's cumbersome even as I'm saying this to you guys, but like, I think if there's a, like in last bull run, there's this kind of thought of like Optimism, Arbitrum, and like these in Polygon, like as these individual chains, but as we're shifting away from being like monolithic layer twos to these broad-based ecosystems, you will have to start going through this mind shift of like, it's not this, it's a slightly different infrastructure than what it was in the last cycle.
And then
go ahead.
Last question about the sequencer part on DGEN, the L3, right? Like, they also use the sequencer and then they also settle onto Base after. Is that sequencer a Arbitrum sequencer or is it an OP sequencer?
I believe that a portion of their sequencer actually goes to Arbitrum. I'm not sure if it goes to the foundation or to
That's so crazy.
Or off-chain labs. But then because they're contributing sequencer revenue for Base, which is much smaller, there's a portion of that would go back to OP Collective. That could be entirely wrong. Who knows?
Maybe how they have money Legos. This is modular Legos right here. It's like, and this is really the power of crypto, is like being able to fit different parts of the stack together in such a composable manner. Like, this is really cool, honestly. And this is actually go ahead, Kit.
I wanted to talk about, for the DGEN chain, my buddy created this bot that tracked every single time a new token was launched, because that was pretty much what was happening, right? A new meme coin was just popping up. So I joined the channel at night. I woke up 8 hours later, and I saw that there was already almost 800 notifications overnight. So there was 800 tokens that were launched just after 8 hours after I woke up and went to sleep. And I'm just like, what? That's so crazy. And I just thought about, first thing was, wow, the sequencer revenue must be popping off if everyone's just aping into all these things and paying all the fees, right? So I thought that was, kind of crazy. Just seeing how the first use case are these coins and these meme coins.
Yeah, Josh, I was going to ask, as we get into this modular world of L2s, L3s, and, everybody from Frax to DGEN launching their own rollup, some critique that has come out is the UX nightmare that this could become. And I'm wondering, what are your thoughts on like how we can mitigate this? If like there's like 1,000 different chains, and there's like, oh, like you see it in wallets having to like switch wallets and this and that. Like, I guess, like, how does optimism and your side, how do you think about all this fragmentation of liquidity and mindshare?
Yeah, I think that's where, I'm not entirely ashamed of the fact that I don't know enough about DGEN chain, because I will say that a lot of the, I'm saying this as myself, but like we're spending so
tell
much
him. Time. You tell him, Josh.
on the infrastructure ourselves, that the what's being built on top of it sometimes, like, can still surprise us. It definitely surprises me, at least. And I think that that's really where our heads are, like, as a team, is we're trying to like, especially from like a product and a growth perspective, it's much more along the lines of like, what do the next 12 to 24 to 36 months look like as we, get closer to stage two decentralization, as we're growing across well beyond just financial use cases of Blockspace. So I think like we're trying to look at the liquidity and the fragmentation, especially on a product side, of like, how do we actually allow for this native interop from chain to chain that I mentioned, via like a token standard, and how do we actually put in programs in place that prevent the fractured liquidity, et cetera. Like, a lot of the teams that we're talking to that are fairly large and thinking about L2s, those are questions that we're all tackling together. And I think that we're going to come up with a solution where, at the end of the day, like, the user won't know that they're interacting with one chain on this app or this other chain for this other app. Like, behind the scenes, we'll have this kind of interconnected layer. And that's really where the team, I think, is focusing the bulk of our time, much more so than on DGEN chain.
I guess, how does that look like? Like, everything, it's going to feel like one thing, but like, how does it actually work if everything's all over the place?
Yeah, I think, there are teams that are actually working on the opposite side of it, who, like, far-fetched teams who I never would have thought that would want to talk about this, but like, are trying to do, even up to the hardware level, of like, if you're interacting like with your phone for the first time and you're on an app, like, it doesn't matter which app you're on, the app itself is going to reside on a chain, and that chain itself will have a native standard that is sending, crossing messages and tokens between the two, and you just don't even know it. The same way it could be working now, but obviously everything's siloed, like in the Web 2 fashion, if that makes sense.
Got it. And with Optimism, you mentioned all these different parts. You have the, OP Stack, Optimism Collective, OP Token, all that stuff. I want to go into a bit of the philosophy of Optimism and, what is kind of the origins of that? How has that evolved? And what does it look like today? Because I know you guys do retroactive public goods funding. You guys are, you know, pride yourselves on being Ethereum aligned. So like, how has Optimism and its philosophy evolved over the past several years?
Yeah, I think the part that I mentioned out of the gate in terms of how the team has like has evolved, the stack itself accounts for a lot of what the founders have done. To be honest, I think they've come a long way. And as they've come a long way, they're applying the learnings so that other people don't kind of go through the same process. RetroPGF is a really great example of that. But in terms of like what it looks like, what we're, you know, what the philosophy is like a decentralized internet or an open source internet that basically anyone can build with and benefit from, but it's not really owned by anyone. Like that's kind of the TLDR of what success with Optimism as a whole means. And throughout in that process, there's the tech stack itself, there's governance, there's RetroPGF. So there's a bunch of different ways that we're working through that, to your point. In terms of like the Ethereum alignment, so this is something that the team originally went through when they were working out, building out Optimism as a whole. Like it was quite a bit of different code than Geth at first. And then what they went through this kind of culling process. And so now Ethereum line aligned is that there's like, I think less than 1,000 lines of code difference between the OP stack and Geth. So that basically like there's fewer attack vectors, very, very easy to scale because of that alignment with Ethereum. And then it makes it easier for things like, you know, when Dankun upgrade happened, we didn't really have any, we didn't have downtime when we were pushing it live. And as a result, like everyone that was on Base and Zora and Mode all got the benefits of having block space and reduced fees, et cetera. So that's kind of like a couple pieces together. I lost a little bit of what you were saying though, Dave.
And I guess like not just Ethereum aligned technically, but like Ethereum aligned philosophically.
Yeah, exactly. I think that especially the idea of like of being an open source, like public good, like at the end of the day, we're rapidly trying to decentralize things, like including our own organization in certain ways, which is really kind of surreal experience where you're trying to, because we know that we can't scale it on our own. And what does that mean? We have to give up responsibility. We have to bring in the community. And I think that's actually like one of the most, like it's one of the craziest things. Like if you guys have a chance, like first of all, Carl's talk at ETH Denver, when he talks through RetroPGF or the Superchain, maybe it's not Denver, ETH Denver, but it's some ETH event, is definitely worth the listen. Cause like his visionary stance on what all this looks like is just like, it's unreal. And so now we're actually bringing a lot of that to life, which is fantastic. And the governments and RetroPGF are very big parts of that. And I think like as a whole, I'm not sure if it's clear to unless you're deeply involved with the OP collective, you understand like what it actually means. But we are like, we just, the last round of RetroPGF, for example, was 30 million OP that were allocated. And that was kind of across a range of people that were building on the OP stack. If you were doing something with the collective governance, if you're doing something within the developer ecosystem, or I think there was like those that were improving like the end user experience. And maybe I think there was something else, or maybe it was just those four. But either way, it was 30 million OP that was allocated to those that were building. And it was, I think we've contributed to several hundred projects to date that are building in the space. And then we just announced round four. So collectively, we have like roughly 850 million OP that are going to go out to the next kind of couple of rounds of RetroPGF. But round four that just came out is going to be specifically focused on like on-chain builders. And then that's in May. And then I think through the rest of the year, we've got three other rounds that are happening, and all of those are going to have OP tokens associated with them. And sorry, I'm kind of jumping all over. But I think what the formation of RetroPGF RetroPGF says a lot about what Optimism itself is also trying to kind of bring to the ecosystem. So at first, when they were building like Plasma and building out even Optimism, like it wasn't as easy for Carl and Jing and Ben to get funding. And I'm paraphrasing for sure. This is why you guys should for sure watch. Like, I think Jing does a good talk on this as well. They couldn't get funding. And so the idea came like, we need it to be where if you're making any kind of impact, if you're making some kind of impact, you should get profit. And so there's the tagline that we have is impact equals profit. And that's where if you build anything, even if we can't like get you some kind of recognition out of the gate for that, at least in retrospect, we should be able to do it. So
in hindsight.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's like the retro part of retroactive public goods funding, which like it doesn't, it's not crazy because like if you guys think of the last time you had a job, like you worked for 2 weeks and then you were paid after. But I think a lot of the funding mechanisms that we're used to are really like, I need to get a check from a VC before I can start building this next round. And so we're kind of working both sides of that. And like we have kind of government grants, which are a little bit more proactive. And then we have retroactive public goods funding, which is retroactive. And through those ecosystems, we're basically setting up where there's no reason to not build with an optimism. Like you're going to get, if you do some kind of meaningful contribution, you're going to get, OP tokens, and that will give you access to, the ability to vote for future upgrades, et cetera. And that in itself, like the idea of retroactively accounting for work that someone has done, like from a funding mechanism is actually quite novel, I think. And it's awesome. It's terrifying. But so far it's been very,
what makes it terrifying?
I mean, in some ways I'm kind of like, we're kind of decentralizing our roles. And that's kind of like, it's not really terrifying. It's like I said, it's one of the reasons why I joined the team, but like, you kind of join a team to work quickly to remove yourself, to build it, to like give it to the community. And that part's kind of like, it's a long process, of course, but that's kind of the terrifying part of like, what is decentralization? What does it mean to give it up? Like, to the community. And
yeah. And we only have so many models and past examples to look at. I think one of the best examples is MakerDAO, and how they have decentralized. And it wasn't just a straight path towards, hey, we're a DAO completely decentralized. They had like, they were a DAO, and then they formed a foundation, and they dissolved the foundation. It was just, and now they have sub DAOs that make up this main DAO. So the path to decentralization is not a straight line. And actually that makes me think, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Dave, finish up.
Oh no, I lost my thought. You go ahead.
Okay, sorry, but I just wanted to jump in and talk about like there's the decentralization and then there's also the re-centralizing, which is what happened and what we saw with Synthetics and over at Kane, right? When he had to come back to Synthetics and kind of like bring the house together again and like re-rally the troop and just like get the vision back on board. I think, Rune did the same thing too. Like
Rune did it.
He went through the same thing and then they came back.
So Rune was like, funny. Yeah, Rune was funny because he was like, oh man, like I can't even leave this shit. Like anytime I try to sell my tokens, people are dumping. Like, oh, I guess I should just like go back. I might as well just take care of it myself.
Yeah. So, to answer your question, Josh, it's like, yeah, you work so hard to push to the decentralization and kind of give it to the community, but it also potentially is a non-zero chance that the OP team might have to like come back and be like, all right, actually, we really need to keep running this.
Yeah, I mean, I think the governance side of the house at Optimism is really exciting for that reason, because like the way that we have the token house and the citizen house, and they then between these two, between token holders and a batch of citizens actually do also function as like a KYC voting house, I guess, have a lot of influence in terms of what is being built in the space. And again, like it's kind of like an ideal state. We have like a governance structure in place that is not nearly as centralized as like a team of like core contributors, and much more of a decentralized governance. Like again, tens of thousands of OP token holders that are making choices. And so, yes, I agree with both of you. It's very experimental. There are some learnings that we've had from it. I think I'm allowed to do this. I'll give a shout out to my team. Like the person who's actually managing the governance on this, her name is Justine, and she is incredibly giga. Like, I feel like in-house, like every time I have a conversation with anyone on my team, I'm always the lowest bar, and it's very flattering because everyone that you work with is like, how do I get the chance to actually work with this person who knows this domain and this subset of it in such specific detail? It's incredible, to be honest. But I say that because we're very actively researching the governance side of it. And I would say stay tuned to anything that Justine has to share on that front if you're curious about it.
Shout out Justine. So you mentioned it's a two house governance system. And I remember reading when this first came out, this interested me. So there's like the governance house and the citizen house. The citizen house and the token house. What is the difference between the two? Yeah, what is exactly is going on here in OP governance?
Yeah, so the again, Justine would be almost a better person for you guys to pull on for this segment. But she, so the token house is exactly what you were saying. So it's kind of like, in theory, it's like hundreds of thousands of addresses that have access to make votes and choices depending on whatever your tokens are. So even when you're getting OP tokens via RetroPGF, like, or we're collecting the sequencer revenue that then funnels back into RetroPGF, that funnels back into the, you know, contributors. That's like the primary way of actually starting to make decisions in terms of deliberating on what we're going to vote for, what's actually going to go through as a proposal, et cetera. And then the citizen house is actually a bit more responsible for RetroPGF and kind of making those decisions. And I believe there's actually a way that they involve with proposals going through governance as well. And so it's not the same as like a like the Senate and the House in the US. I think they're much broader. It's much broader in terms of the token house being more representative. But I think the citizen house, yeah, I would highly recommend anyone go to, like, I think it's governance.gov.optimism.io, and you can read much more about both of those, I
believe. And where does, like, the Optimism Foundation sit in the Optimism ecosystem? Because there's so many different parts of it now. You have the collective, you have these governance, you have the different houses, and now you have the foundation.
Yeah, so governance is a separate entity, and then the foundation is, you can kind of think of the foundation as the growth and governance and RetroPGF side of the house. And then you have OP Labs, which is doing mainly product and eng work. OP Labs is much more like a core contributor to the OP stack. And then OP, and then the foundation is much more about like growing Optimism as a whole. Yeah, traditional like brand awareness and governance and RetroPGF. So
with the utility of the OP token and it's with governance, but is there any other utility with associated with the OP token?
No, to the best of my knowledge, that's the main purpose of the OP token is, yeah, for governance.
Got it.
And then the idea is like you're basically using that governance token to recycle future governance tokens.
Got it. And then you can use it to vote for the retroactive public goods.
Yeah, for a whole range of things that can happen within the OP Optimism Collective. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And go ahead, Kit.
I wanted to ask about the token and how, you know, the Atom token in the Cosmos ecosystem has always been like poo-pooed to death about like there's zero value accrual and it's just like Cosmos ecosystem could exist with Atom just completely not being in the ecosystem. Now, if you kind of see Optimism being kind of different rather than being a central hub and spoke model, where everything is super chain, like, do you see, like, what are the future possible value accrual to OP, the token, when there is a million or, you know, hundreds of millions of super chains on the super chain?
Yeah. So that, well, I think the limited supply helps us figure out price discovery, value. When you say value accrual, I think that's probably the easiest way for us to understand, like, how much we actually, like, Agora is a team that's working on the votes and the voter delegation. And what does it actually mean to have a big voice? And so I can kind of think of it again, more along the lines of like, maybe it's like government value discovery, or like, well, how significant, like, if you own 10% of anything, 10% of the votes, and you want to push a certain thing too, that's going to obviously help benefit your chain in a direction. I'd see that there's a lot of power in that capacity. But to be honest, I don't know the Atom token, like what happened for it to dissolve. Like, I mean, I'd love your quick thoughts on that, or for it to be deemed so useless.
So, you don't need to use Atom as like the share security, because you spin up your own validator set and your own trust kind of system on each individual Cosmos app chain, right? And because of that, since you don't need to rely on Atom for the security, like, and there's no like revenue sharing back into like the central hub either. So what's the use, right? That's kind of the gist of it. And I'm just curious, but what you brought up about OP governance and how that would have value in the future, because as more and more things get spilled under the OP collective and there's a kind of super chain, when you want to enact new policy, then you need to effectively, you know, persuade these token holders to vote for whatever policy that you want to enact. So maybe the value comes from there. It reminds me a lot of the VECRV system, where you kind of have to go and petition and lobby your votes and win over. And actually, there's a whole system built on top of that, which is called like the bribing system, right? I've never thought about it at the chain level. The vote incentive system, we rebranded. The bribing system is very 2021. So the voting incentive system, I never thought about it at the chain level, but that's interesting.
Yeah, and with the I was going to say, you mentioned before with the Optimism Collective receiving a portion of the sequencer fees. I believe I heard an interview on Bankless. I don't know if it was with Carl or Benjamin, I think Jesse Pollock was on there as well. And it talked about 15% going. I wasn't sure if it was to the foundation or the collective. I guess it's to the collective. Is the number 15%? So basically, if you're OP stack, if you're official OP stack, your 15% of your sequencer fees go towards the collective to benefit, which makes sense that it's called a collective because it's benefiting the collective and future retroactive public goods for anyone in the ecosystem. Is that correct?
Yeah, and it's not actually, it's not 15%, it's 2.5%.
It's 2.5%, okay.
Yeah, it's 2.5%, and then, 10 or 15% of net profit, I believe, but it ends up always shaking out to be the 2.5%.
Oh, okay, got it. And for retroactive public goods, I remember talking to somebody about it, like any part of that touches the OP ecosystem could be in it. So like, for example, us at Flywheel, since we're doing a bunch of stuff for Frax, could we in theory apply for a retroactive public goods grant to be like, hey, like we're, you know, we've been proselytizing Frax for a long time. They're OP, they're OP stack. We're doing this interview right now. There's OP stack. Like, is that how it works?
Yeah. So we're working through actually chains that are like L2s that are within the super chain, being able to account for retro PGF being built on their chains. That's kind of a new piece that we're going through now, actually. But in the previous versions, like in rounds 1 through 3. And the other thing is actually, as we're going through RetroPGF, it in itself is a learning of how we can make it better and better and more pointed to be more value added for Optimism as a whole. So rounds 1 through 3 kind of had some changes to them. Like round 1 was a couple million OP. Round 2 was 10 million OP, and that was really focused on infrastructure and education and tooling. Round 3, I mentioned before, was like the OP stack and collective governance and developer ecosystem and then users. And then this round, then thereafter, it's going to be a bit more pointed. So the next round, for example, is on chain builders. But if you just Google RetroPGF, I think around RetroPGF 4, maybe, you'll see this piece that just came out literally last week for us. Where we talk through how the rest of it's going to be used in the next like rounds 4 through 8. And in one of those, for example, there might be a subset that you guys exactly could apply for RetroPGF.
Nice. Yeah, we love to hear it. It's like governance and distributing rewards is so interesting because there's like several different models that exist, whether it's, you know, Optimism, retroactive public goods. You see Arbitrum with the STIP, their whole STIP program, and the governance maneuvering that protocols had to do to get that. And now you see all these different points programs, whether they're on Blast, where it's like a central committee kind of decides like, oh, there's like now just not just Blast points, but Blast gold. And we decide like which protocols get them and their point of them and is distribute them to dApps. Or you have something like Frax and Fractal with the Flux incentives, which is basically like, let's get humans out of the way completely. Let's just create an algorithm that basically is the equivalent of Google PageRank. We'll call it FloxRank. And the highest used smart contracts and the users that interact with them, they'll get rewarded these Fractal points that'll be redeemable for something one day. So, you know, there's all these different rewards and like experiments going on with like, how do we reward positive contributions to an ecosystem? And I'm curious, like, what are your thoughts on like all these different efforts and in all these different ecosystems, whether they're like towards protocols or towards users?
Yeah, I mean, I think the TLDRs will get there, right? Actually, there was an announcement I think we just dropped today because, like, it's interesting. I could talk about the non non kind of finance use cases. But there is a team that we just announced today that we're partnering with to better understand governance grants allocations. And it's something I think, like, we're like, there's a whole array. Like, what's the most obvious, the easiest version is you have a single human making a decision of everything. And like, you have limited capacity. And the extreme opposite of that is to what Phlox is you take every human out of it and it's fully algorithmic. And I do think that some kind of middle ground is almost ideal. Like, one thing I'm kicking around in my own head is like, what would it mean for us to have a carve out that is kind of an, like an AI or ML based version where we have a model that is helping us dictate what portion should go out, but then you're still having a portion that's dictated by humans. To be honest, this is entirely run by the governance side of the house. I'm just merely a speculative team member thinking about it. They're going through this every single day to make sure that it's the best decisions for the community. I would love to hope that the way that we're doing the token house and the citizen house is the way it shakes out. But you know, I think we'll keep on learning. That's kind of one of the beauties of government, right? Is that it's even, I will say, like, there is, like, we are all living, like, and I think representative democracy as a whole is something a lot of us align with. Market capitalism, market economies are, you know, things a lot of us align with. Capitalism, something we're all entrenched in. So I think there are things, like, in real life that we're taking that can be applied as kind of better ecosystems. We don't need to constantly reinvent the wheel. But yeah, who knows what this is going to shake out like in 5 years.
Yeah, you know? It's to be determined. And you mentioned non-DeFi use cases and applications that you guys are working on. What does the future of on-chain look like? I feel like out of all the different ecosystems, the Optimism ecosystem, whether it's with, like, you know, Farcaster or with Frentech or whatever else is coming down the line, is at the forefront of these. So I don't even like calling it social fi because it has, I mean, like, there's a finance mm-hmm. element, but like, you don't want finance to be at the forefront because, like, social interactions, there's something intangible. It's like, I'm not friends with, I mean, with like social interactions, like real genuine ones don't have like a financial element, but I guess these like social protocols and applications, like, what is that? I'm just kind of going off here. What is the future of like on-chain look like in a non-DeFi perspective?
Yeah. I mean, I think the experimentation of it, to your point, is very, like, it's awesome. It's what this space is great for. Like, you can really build and burn and rebuild quickly and everything on-chain. I think that, again, because I'm being newer to the team, I'm kind of riding the tailwinds of the amazing work that they've done for years. And I really have to say, I admire the team for being so heads down on the tech stack and on thinking through FPGF and the governance before actually like trying to chase a specific narrative. I think when people think of Optimism out of the gate, you definitely think of, you know, optimistic rollups, and you think of kind of this Ethereum alignment, and you don't necessarily have a narrative that it's attributed to it. I think that that's a reason why it's very approachable. The culture itself is very accessible and incredibly open. And I think that brings in kind of all contingents of people, and plus the code is so Ethereum aligned itself. That being said, like, when I'm thinking of kind of narratives for the, like, what can start to fill all this like cheaper and cheaper block space, I think of it in roughly like six areas, and for at least for this year, one's obviously finance, which we've kind of gone through. It's DeFi, TradFi, and stables, and tokenization, et cetera. And then there's kind of like ecosystem and infrastructure. So a big tranche in that is actually the AI ML space. So we're doing a lot of research and talking to quite a few teams about how you can actually, what you can put on chain when you're thinking of like the full stack of machine learning and AI. And that's there's a lot of very interesting experiments that are happening there. I'm trying to work with teams to make sure we don't recreate a lot of the things that happened, I think, in the last bull run. And I don't know your guys' stance on meme coins, but in general, like, just making sure that people are launching like kind of more value-added tokens that have protocols behind them that actually are benefiting from having the token live. So that's a very interesting space that we're quickly, talking to teams about. Then obviously like the modularity across the different DA layers, that's a space, and then NFT, gaming, social, and then like DeepIn.
Yeah, so in general, Brian, go ahead.
No, go ahead, Dave.
I was going to say with meme coins, my take on meme coins is I think what underlies crypto, one of the things that underlies crypto the most is leveling the playing field between the little guy and the entrenched incumbent, or like whether it's like, you know, the retail versus VC, or like this dichotomy between like the common man versus the elite. and it levels the playing field. And like throughout all the different cycles, there have been different equalizing measures that are like in a gray area, but they do equalize it, whether it's in 2017 with ICOs, democratizing fundraising, or in 2021, yield farming and that whole crazy DeFi summer and all that. Or then you had NFTs and in that regard, like there was some equalizing force where like it didn't matter your position or like where you were, you had an equal opportunity as long as you put in the work. And I think with me, with everything kind of maturing as it does so naturally, whether it's like BTC with the ETF, you know, Ethereum going the direction of proof of stake, having their own interest rate, and DeFi is definitely growing up as well, you know, with RWAs. The like, it's this energy of equalizing the playing field, this kind of Robin Hood energy is at meme coins right now, and it's accessible. It's people can understand dogs with hats and cat and shark cat and all this different stuff. And it's fun. It's like it gives people a feeling. And so it democratizes finance. And so I think with like, and I'm sure, you know, meme coins will have its cycle, it will boom, it will bust as always. And then it's going to go somewhere else. This energy is not going to go away, whether it's like stays in crypto or out of crypto. And right, meme coins to me are like the latest iteration of that like dynamic.
Yeah, I think the access to, I mean, if I build it, I should, you know, can my work be accounted for is something that yeah. itself was a very big thing. And not trying to push the optimism side, but I will say that's like kind of the best point of, in my mind, one of the better points of Retro PGF is because like if it's really the case and you want to come explore and you're technical or you're non-technical, you're not sure what to do, like we're trying to set up a mechanism where, to your point, like do something, have an impact, and there will definitely be, you know, profit yeah. associated with it.
And like the most bullish, one last thing, the most bullish thing that can happen to any coin or meme coin is, you know, founder or dev like burns the supply, whether it's like Satoshi like not touching his like million tokens, who knows where he is, Dogecoin dev selling all his tokens, Whiff dev selling all his tokens. There's nothing more powerful than like a dev sacrifice, like the first guy, the first insider sacrificing what they have, and then like the democratizes it for everyone. So I just want to put that in there, but yeah. Kit, go ahead.
Yeah, Josh, you brought up impact equals profit, right? And I feel like meme coins are having a massive impact. So if you were, or the governance team sees a proposal from like a very popular meme coin that had tremendous impact, that contributed a ton to the sequence of revenue, asking for retroactive grant funding, do you think they fit? Like they technically had a major impact. Like they took on a lot of mind share, you know, and they proved, you know, whatever, generated a ton of revenue, whatnot.
Yeah, I think that would definitely be up to the, you know, the grants council to figure out if how they'd want to handle that.
Has that happened yet?
Candidly, I don't know. I think we're just announcing round three for Retro. Oh. The next governance grants are coming out soon. Retro PGF 3. I don't know. Actually, I'd have to go back and look. But I'm guessing that these were, you know, because the bull run happened pretty quickly, I think. Like this little right. spike that we're seeing is just over the past couple of months. So I don't think that there has been enough time for people to even submit those kinds of proposals. Yeah,
because the reason why I brought that up is like meme coins on the surface, it seems like you just pick a really good ticker and you just run with it. But in actuality, there's actually so many things for like a quote unquote legitimate meme coin project to actually full on executing and getting to like the certain milestones. Like the simplest one would be getting a CoinGecko listing, for example, right? To even get there in the first place, it involves a ton of coordination on the meme coin team part. And I just want to kind of, you know, dispel any myths that people have that it's like, hey, you pick a good ticker and it just sends to the sky, right? That's just not the reality. There's like actually teams behind this. And it gave me a different appreciation for meme coins is that, you know, this is actually a representation of somebody's, like multiple people's this collective effort into doing something fun together, right? It's, somebody said this, not me, but it's a user generated asset is what meme coins are. It's like user generated content and the manifestation of these meme coins and the coordination it takes to make a successful meme coin, like it has merit. You know, it's like people collectively doing things together and having fun. and then other people have fun along the way, and it just so happens that, you know, that there's profit angle.
And then the meme coins do have utility and like develop into something more tangible one day. You see this, you see multiple examples like this. There's like Bonk on Solana with BonkBot, which is like the most popular sniper on the chain. I would argue Bearer Chain. I mean, yes, they were like NFTs, but they started off as like a meme, as a culture with their memes. And from that, they built an entire chain after listening to their community and users. So I think like memes are probably the best way to launch a community. Hell, even with optimism, you had this angle, this like philosophical angle of that was around public goods and this philosophical alignment of like, oh, let's build a new open source internet that has a financial layer on top of it. So like memes are really the most powerful force in the universe. And Kit, you weren't here for this interview, but I did an interview with the Pump.Fun founder, Alon. Josh, have you seen Pump.Fun?
No, I have not, no.
Okay, so it's this, think of it as like, it's a launch pad for meme coins, where it's like anybody for like 2 cents, for like literally like 2 cents, can go and launch a meme coin. And like I swear, like it kind of looks like 4chan or a casino. Like when you go on the website, it's just like different meme coins just like popping up. And like it democratizes like launching meme coins and makes it like super, super easy. And so I really see this as a future of the internet. It's just like you get like the pulses of people, like instead of like liking posts, like people are like gonna just like buy tokens of like of like whatever is hot or whatever the meme is. And like you're seeing this develop now. But like at the end of the day, culture is everything. TLDR.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Because they're just very early subsets of a culture for sure.
Yeah.
Completely agree with that.
And so, yeah. And almost wrapping up here, like another question I want to ask is, what's on the roadmap for Optimism and the Superchain? Like, what do you have in store? Do you have any alpha for us?
Yeah. I mean, the good thing is most of what we're putting out is pretty out and in the public, which is awesome, mm-hmm. That we don't have to kind of mask things. The big things, I think, on the product side. So actually, the biggest thing that happened was obviously 4844 going through, and that was massive in terms of blob space. Between 4844 and span batches, you know, we're seeing a pretty drastic reduction in L2 fees, which is fantastic. It's just incredibly cheap to do any kind of a transaction on L2s now. Full proofs went on testnet for us, which is pretty great. I think that was last week that they went live. I think those are going to be going live by mid-year, end of year. And then, you know, very soon after, later this year, early next year, we're working through like multi-proof. So like our end goal, obviously, is to stay true to centralization, you know, as fast and safely as we can get there. And so we're rapidly pushing towards that, which is exciting. We are working through what it would actually mean to have like a native gas token. And then we're working through the ability to use a variety of VA layers as well in-house. So there's some really good things that are kind of coming to the modularity for the stack. And there's obviously a lot that's happening on the retro PGF and the governance side, which we've talked a lot about so far. And then the growth side, I think I kind of told you about the ways that we're thinking about the market as a whole and what we're going after. I would say that be on the lookout for, you know, our stance on L3s, as we start to solidify what that looks like. That'll be kind of an interesting conversation that comes up. I think those are kind of the main highlights.
Can we actually double click on the growth and BD side? Because I mean, the tech side is everyone can read about it in the docs, but I feel like the BD and the growth strategy is something that we can only learn directly from you. And I've always had this thought as like, you know, initially started as like, hey, please build on OP mainnet, you know, Q Quenta, Q Lyra. And then now it's like, I don't know, is there a shift? But hey, just build on OP stack. Okay. And then I don't know, it's now another shift where it's like, hey, build on an L3. Like, how are you guys thinking about that in terms of like BD and growth strategy?
Yeah, I think because the team is, because it is, you know, open source and MIT licensed, the OP stack is the most forked stack. I think there's like 40 plus like unofficial OP stacks. And so I say that because like, first and foremost, the team, you know, has built Optimism to be a way that it should be accessible to anyone, no matter what, whether you're part of the Superchain or not. There are a couple of examples that you can think of, like OPBNB, where they basically forked the chain and they went in a very different direction. And to get all of us to work together within the super chain is something, you know, we want to have happen, but if it can't, we're not sure what that looks like. I think that's probably one of the coolest partnerships, actually, to show how strong the OP community is, though, because the OPBNB team, you know, kind of went in a different direction with things, but we still have conversations. And they actually found something like in our code base where they're like, hey, you guys should check this out. And despite us kind of running, working on things differently, we still have collaboration to improve the stack as a whole. And the incentive is literally just to have the best code base amongst all of us, even if we're not running in the super chain at the same time. And I think that was probably one of the cooler experiences I've had since I've been with the team, because it was like, I mean, it would be like, one of you is Rivian and one of you is Tesla, and you find out that the chassis and your Rivian's terrible because you're a Tesla engineer and you share it, you know, like, I think it's just like such a good ethos of like, let's build for the common good, even if we're not going to use the resource in the exact same way, is probably the thing that like, I mean, it's just like, it's so effing cool. I don't even know how to explain it. Like, it's the coolest thing. Like, it's like rising tides, you know, lifts all boats. And that's what I think, when I think of optimism, I think that's truly like what a lot of it boils down to. It's like, I just want to help you be better so you can help me be better. And if that means launching an L2, awesome. If that means launching an L3, like, I think another thing that I'm kind of proud of at Optimism is if a team thinks it's best to build with a different chain, like, that's important to them, then they should do that. You know, like we're not trying to steer teams towards like just building with the OP stack because of all the things that we've talked about today. Like, we think you should be building with what makes the most sense to your team. And I'll be honest, the ability to say that like during the bulk of the calls that I'm on, the same way I'm saying it to you guys right now, it feels so good. Like, I don't turn off the computer at night and wish I had said something that I wouldn't. I'm just like, well, I might get burned, but like everything I said is how we're doing it. So yeah, the ecosystem's great. I love it. Side note, I'll say this is huge plug to the team, to be honest. Like, this is the best, even after my own startup, the best culture I've ever been part of. Like, it's just so humbling to be able to lead work with such a values focused team, that really does, you know, at the end of the day, want everyone to benefit from what we're doing. So it's pretty great.
So then like first of all, I just want to comment on the BNB OP thing. It's more surprising, like, who's the one that brought it up, right? It's not just the message that, hey, there was something wrong in the code base, but who it came from. It's like, when you think of BNB, you don't think of like public good, you know, for sure. And that's super interesting. So, you know, super kudos there. It's like almost reigniting your trust and love for humanity. It's like, people actually will contribute.
It kind of reminds me of, I mean, if you look at like protocols that make up the internet, like the email protocol per se, and you know, there's not one person that controls it, but yes, but there's like several big clients of it, like Google and you know whatever else is out there. And I'm sure it'd be the same thing if like Google spots an error in like the email protocol and be like, hey guys, we got to fix this. It's literally the same exact thing. So that's how you know that you have like a protocol, like a true protocol, is if there's like a balance of power between big stakeholders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And to get back to the point of like BD and growth though, so it seems like you guys don't push or angle for a specific outcome when you talk to these teams. Like, you just kind of let them do whatever they could even fork OP stack and just not even be part of the super chain and just take the tech and go. And that's kind of radical to be, why would you want to do that? But if they could, and they're like, no. Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah, that's true. I guess there's one example. But I mean, that's so interesting because as a corporation or like a project, like a for-profit project, I would imagine you guys have a clear goal of, hey, we need to get more BD partnerships to build specifically on the OP stack. And then what are some, you know, organization-wide KPIs that you guys are tracking towards?
To your first point, surely people can just fork it, you know, they can do what they want. I think it's very clear when we talk to, it's clearer to teams why you actually would want to be part of the super chain and part of the upgrade. So I think 4844, and I mentioned that before, there was no downtime that happened when we pushed, you know, Blobs live, between, cool. between, well, without saying teams. But so that's like a, it's a benefit, right? Because then you get the shared upgrades, you get shared, you know, potentially shared liquidity. There's obviously ecosystem support, and per what we've talked about, like you're actually contributing revenue back to the collective as a whole. So like, there's just a bigger, you're working on a much broader mission than just an individual chain. And I think the teams that are interested about working on that broader vision together, you know, we haven't had a chance to talk about Frax nearly enough, but Sam and the team, I think, very much embody a lot of the values that we've talked about. And it's why working with Frax and launching Frax was an absolute pleasure, because there was almost no point in time where we like had to like, we were just unified in terms of what the goal is. And those are some of the teams that make it, you know, much, it's a very different conversation out of the gate. But that being said, like, there are definitely teams who, in some, like there's one team I'm talking to that almost doesn't want to necessarily have a ton of interoperability, but they still really believe in like what we're trying to build at Optimism. And so they're actually very excited about joining the team, or sorry, joining the super chain, but don't necessarily have the same high demand to have the contribution back to the collective. But in general, they just believe in the principles of it. That wasn't your question out of the gate. I curved it. Can you remind me of your question?
Yeah, it's just like, what are some internal KPIs you guys are tracking towards if you're just going to let people do whatever?
I'll be honest, we're still fleshing out some of those KPIs, and some of it maybe.
They're quite intangible, aren't they?
Yeah. Some of them I shouldn't share.
How much happiness did we increase on the blockchain this week?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The LDR is about a smile.
Bhutan type beat.
Oh my God.
But we have some that are like kind of along the lines of what I was saying to you before. Like, you know, it doesn't make sense for us to solely chase like an extremely novel use case of block space. And so that's why we're kind of like spreading our time across all these different verticals to make sure that, you know, people are realizing what block space, you know, cheap block space looks like. I think like in general, especially when coming into the space from stablecoins, like I really want application of block space and real world use cases and people to benefit from what we're doing that don't have any clue that they're interacting with it. And I didn't come into the space from like a degen side, but less so on like the, like it was more on like the real world application of it. And so as a result, like that's kind of the lens I'm constantly thinking about too, is like, how can we actually make a real world application of this versus like just circulating already pre-existing cash within the ecosystem, so to speak, you know, not to say that that doesn't provide new experimentation directly to your point earlier, Dave, and build a lot of culture, but I think there's a lot to be said about applications that we still are learning about that could be tangential. And so those are some of the fun conversations as well, as like teams that may have not in any way thought that they could benefit by putting some things on chain, and what would actually mean for them to do it. Like I said, like, especially in the AI space.
Yeah. It's a pendulum that goes from culture centric to, application centric. It comes back and forth. Before we go, I do want to like touch on what it's like to work with Frax and build Fraxtal and the whole launch of that. What was that whole process like? And how do you think it's been, you know, turning out so far? And where do you see Fraxtal's place in the whole OP stack and OP ecosystem?
Yeah. So out of the gate, I've got this awesome colleague, Smit, who is also Giga, and he kicked off the relationship with Sam. He was nurturing it for a long time. I just happen to have been lucky enough to kind of pick it up after he'd done a lot of the work. I think that Frax's like thought of becoming like a basically like a globally systemic like M2 money supply issuer is audacious and fantastic at the same time. And I think it's a reason why, you know, if you're going to take a big, big bet on what you can become in the future, where you're putting CPI, you're tokenizing CPI in some ways, and you know, you're launching all the different tokens that they have. It made it really exciting to think of a future together. And I think as they were evaluating where they wanted to go, I do think, as I mentioned before, that Frax was pretty committed and really believed in the vision and kind of the standards that were being put forth by the superchain and the collective. So it seemed like it was a very good fit. How it's going, if I'm being honest, Dave, I think you'd have to tell me. I briefly saw the Flox numbers. It sounds like it's getting really good traction. Obviously they were very excited about announcing that in Denver. And I think that there's like several dozen apps that are already involved on either directly on Fraxtal or...
By the time this comes out, the fee switch will be turned on. And I think once the fee switch is turned on, a lot more attention will be directed towards how Frax is doing. Sam released his Singularity proposal, which recently passed, that unites all different parts of the ecosystem. You know, whether it's at the application level, or like different parts that were, you know, kind of in their own little area, like FPIS, bringing it back into the fold, or at the infrastructure level. Especially at the application level, two things that like stuck out from the proposal and also from the space that I did is that there's like a new black hole for FXS, and this is like this frax shares liquidity engine, where basically instead of like going and like burning FXS's going buyback and distributing all of it, the FXS is actually going to be half it will be sent to these new liquidity pairings, so it'll be FXS to SFRAX, FXS to SFRAX ETH, and so you kind of have this like black hole for liquidity. And I thought of it like, wow, this is like kind of the same thing as like all these different meme coins pairing to Sol on Solana, or you know, the same thing that happened, and then those LPs locking liquidity, and then like the second big unlock, which kind of like clicked for me for Fractal, is Frax is making this really big, another big multi-chain push, whether it's like on Phantom with Sonic or Blast having SFRAX on there. Like the real key thing here is like all the collateral of all the Frax and Frax ETH is going to live on Fractal itself. It's going to sit, most of it is just going to sit on Fractal, and there you can just, there's like a lot you could just do, because you'll have this like base of liquidity, a base of from the collateral, and then different teams can go and build on that. So like that, the collateral, and I would expect in the same way that teams copied the Frax ETH, SFRAX ETH 2 token model, now that it's gone to the infrastructure level, it's going to be like, oh, like the stable coin is going to live on one chain, but like the collateral will be on like our home base of Rollup. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So, but yeah, a lot of progress, a lot of exciting stuff in Fraxland, and I think we'll end it at that. But before we go, we like to do a lightning round to get to know the guest off chain. So Kit, go ahead.
All righty, so I'm going to kick it off here. Josh, what was your virgin crypto experience? When did you first touch the blockchain, but sex doesn't count?
Oh man, I moved to the Bay Area in 2016. And it was very frothy here. And I went to an EOS hackathon.
Oh, wait. I went to that EOS. It was in 2018?
Yeah, it was in 2018 or 2016.
No, it was in 2018. Yeah. Oh, yes, I have that backpack. Because I was there because I was at, I was at Everpedia at the time and we were built on EOS. So, like, I was at the, you know, I remember Mike Novogratz was there with his fucking Nikes and wearing his Nikes and stuff that stuck out. And yeah, I do remember that hackathon. It was actually quite well done. I think it was
very well. The swag was unreal. Yeah.
Okay. Sorry.
So Josh, now do you tell people your backpack is from that lip balm company?
now my backpack says Optimism on it, actually.
Oh, okay. I got embroidered. Got it. All right. A follow up. So when did you first touch the blockchain? Like, did you do like an EOS transaction at this hackathon or?
Yeah, we were working on a contract. That was like, I think the first time I interacted with it. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure you guys, I didn't pull the trigger on Mt. Gox, or we'd probably be having a different conversation.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. So, second question from that is: what is your favorite off-chain touch grass activity, hobbies, and interests?
Man, I run ultra marathons. It's a love hate.
Ultra.
what's the difference between a regular marathon and an ultra marathon?
It's just the distance. It's normally like twice as long, kind of a thing. Yeah.
Instead of higher, it's longer. Okay. Yeah, that's right. All right, Dave.
What am I asking? Sorry, it's been a minute. What would be some advice to your younger self?
Oh man, to my younger self. Hmm. Man, you throw a curveball at me like that right now. That's a great question. I feel like I've done a good job of like taking risks. I think
you do work in crypto, so yeah. I do. You worked on stablecoins.
I do think
so. No regrets.
I would have taught my younger self, I think, which a lot of us benefit from. And it's a reason, actually, I think that I enjoyed working with the stablecoins that I did, is like financial literacy matters much more. And I do think that there's still a space for us to use Web3 as the way to help improve financial literacy for a lot of younger people. So that would have been definitely the advice. Like, talk more about that. Like, if you can go and...
I love that.
Yeah. You read about Frax. You even just look at Frax's website alone. That teaches you so much, right? About lending and borrowing and et cetera. So I think that's the most important thing I would share. Yeah,
you really learn more about DeFi using these... you learn more about finance using DeFi protocols than anywhere else. It's one thing to read about it in textbooks. And then, I mean, I've never been in TradFi, so I have no idea what that animal is like. But in DeFi... you're in the belly of the beast. You're like direct, you know, you're directly taking the risk on, no pun intended.
Right. And you find out time value of money in a much faster way, right? Like your money is sitting in a bank account versus putting it anywhere else. And not, if you're not using it, lending it out. Like, I think there's just really general, great general principles that, that DeFi could offer a lot of people from financial literacy perspective.
But also I feel like on this financial literacy bit, is people will gain financial literacy and then they immediately get financial delusionary as well too, right after that. It's like, if the APY doesn't have a comma, I'm not going to put my money in it.
Yeah.
So financial there's delusion. Also that element. And so final question from my end, and Dave's going to cap us off. But if you weren't in crypto, tech, or management consulting, what would your professional career path be?
Man, I did all three. What do you mean? How do you?
If you aren't allowed to do any of those things, like what? What was the answer when your elementary school teacher asked you, "What do you want to be when you grow up?"
Oh man, I would have loved to have been an astrophysicist for sure, hands down.
Straight up academia.
Yeah, and not academia, but like researching. I mean, and like aerospace engineer probably would have been the thing.
SpaceX calling. My last question is, who do you want to see on Flywheel? Who would you recommend as a guest?
Everyone that I alluded to from my team that I can't provide the details for, first and foremost, the Optimism team as a whole, you should definitely bring them on. I think staying tuned for the teams that are coming out in the super chain, there might be some interesting teams on the horizon that I think you would have good conversations with.
Who?
I don't think I can share
one
that.
One name.
I mean, I will tell you, Metal just launched. Metal's an L2. They're kind of like a mix between CFI and DeFi team.
I remember Metal. Yep. Yeah.
Oh my, is this the same Metal from 2017?
Yeah, it's the same one.
MTL? Oh my goodness. Wow, Blast from the Past. Okay.
There's actually quite a few teams that are like, that have, yeah, have been on the sidelines that are trying to
figure out. Watch Golem come back as an L2. They have D-pin, more than enough. D-pin. They're going to have a D-pin and all the ETH in that treasury is going to be put in LST. But anyways, I'm going off there. Josh, thank you so much for coming on. Could you give your socials and where people can find you?
Yeah, it's JDubs is the best way to find me on Twitter and on Telegram. I think it's the same thing. There might be a space between the it's and the JDubs, but one of those two is me.
Awesome. Josh, thank you so much for coming on. We hope to see you again soon.
Yeah, thank you guys.
Bye-bye. Greetings, everybody. Welcome to the Post Game. I'm your host, DeFi Dave, here with Capital K, wrapping up an interview with Josh from Optimism. The first thing I have to say is Josh is quite the humble guy, especially coming from someone that wrote their paper about the intersection of quantum mechanics and politics, or like,
yeah,
and I was like, whoa, we're dealing with someone who really, really thinks about deep things off the bat. And I feel like it's always the smartest people that are the most humble. And it sounds like Josh is still somewhat new to the Optimism team, but has definitely bought in, no pun intended, into what they're building and what they're expanding. And he really explained all the different parts of the OP ecosystem very well. And I don't think it's a coincidence that, you know, when I think of Optimism, I think of, you know, if I'm going to launch a roll-up, I'm going to do it on Optimism, right, in the OP stack.
Yeah. For me, I feel like with the organization goals and values is very interesting, in the sense that they are almost themselves a public good, and they kind of view it as that. Because I was very surprised by his answer to like, what is your guys' like BD growth strategy? And he was really just share OP to people and let people do whatever they want with OP. I'm just like, but there's no angle to it. Like you want to increase your L2 count. Like there's like nothing like that. Like I was very shocked to hear how almost, man, what's that word for the society where everything is like utopia, like utopia-esque type of approach to it. It's like, yeah, just do whatever you want as long as this brings net public good.
I think, I have two thoughts. One, I think it aligns very well with Frax. Frax being positive sum, optimism is the same way. It's not a surprise that Frax chose OP Stack to build Fractal. And I think I said this on the show, if not, I said it previously, but how you build in crypto and Web3 is in this open source composable manner. And, you know, optimism has, you know, quite clearly done that. And talk, you know, it was really interesting at the beginning of the show, we were talking about L3s and all the different parts of the modular stack that are composable with each other, like Arbitrum, Orbit, L3 being settled on Base, Optimism, OP Stack, which is settled on ETH. It's crazy.
Crazy. It truly is crazy. Like that is a perfect example of just this modular interop level. I like when he first said interop, I thought it was just between OP to OP, but now it's like, oh no, you could actually interop with literally any other chain. And then that got me thinking, I was like, then why even pick a side, right? If you can just work with any of them, you just got to launch one. Like since there's no quote home base, everything is interop anyways. So yeah, it's curious.
Exactly. And I'm excited to see, you know, where optimism goes in the future. I think what they're doing with retroactive public goods is quite interesting. And it seems like with the optimism token, the whole that it's kind of like you mentioned, it kind of reminds you of like VECRV, but for public goods, it's just like, oh, like the sequencer fees that go towards the optimism collective to go distribute public goods. I think that's quite a novel and very experimental mechanism. And you know, he said that they're still tweaking it and seeing like how it works and how to optimize for optimism.
Well, actually, bro, it's not the sequencer revenue, right? That he's talking literally about the OP tokens itself, and then how that would to be distributed and how the value, quote, the value accrual is going to come from people wanting to buy those OP votes for something. It could be to get more OP token, or it could be to like enact a different a system upgrade.
I wonder how that's going to like turn out in the future. Like, let's say I'm like a huge whale and I want to like take over the ecosystem. Just buy a bunch of OP tokens. And
yeah, I'm curious about it. But then there's also the token house and then the citizen house, right? So the people could come and be like, actually, my dude, no.
It's like a check. It's a check and balance.
Yeah, it's a check and balance system. But surprisingly, you know, checks and balances them, you need three or an odd number, right? So that there's always that one person to mediate or that one.
Well, but it's different branches. Well, this is, with the U.S. governments, like judicial branch, legislative branch, and executive branch. Correct. With optimism, you don't have a judicial branch just yet. If anything, the judicial branch is the chain and there's no executive. It's just, this code. If anything, you kind of have like an Articles of Confederation type beat going on with it just being two houses. But I'm making these like out there comparisons. Wrapping up here, what are your biggest takeaways?
My biggest takeaway is altruistic. That's the word that I was looking for, altruistic. The OP team operates on an altruistic assumption. Like, the OP team is optimistic. How very on brand.
Yeah,
very on brand. Even it comes down to organizational goals, is very optimistic.
I'm bullish on the OP team. The way that he was talking about the OP team and how much like admiration and respect that he has for his teammates in the collective, I think says a lot. And a lot you need to know about optimism and where the future's heading.
I think these guys are like what you said, Dave, all the time is like long-term greedy. right? They're not focused on short term at all. So that was interesting to me. I might have to make some adjustments to my portfolio based on this, though.
Not financial advice. You know, thank you for watching, everyone. As always, if you want to keep up with everything Flywheel, go ahead, hit that bell button, subscribe to our YouTube, leave us a comment, let us know what you think, give us a like, go ahead to our Twitter, give us a follow there, make sure you like this post, repost it, reply to it, let us know what you think. Follow us on all our socials on Twitter, TikTok, and Telegram at Flywheel DeFi. You can follow me on Twitter at DeFiDay22.
You can follow me at 0xCapital_K.
And go ahead to flywheeldefi.com for all your latest updates. Alpha, you will want to subscribe. You'll thank yourself later. And we'll see you next week.
Peace.
Everything said on this episode is not financial or tax advice. This channel is strictly for educational purposes and is not an investment advice or solicitation to buy or sell any assets or to make any financial decisions. This video is not tax advice whatsoever. Please talk to your accountant and do your own research.